the relation of the Kakeya problem to various problems in analysis. For those of you who were not here yesterday or else forgot all of what I said, I'm just going to remind you what a Kakeya set was. Kakeya set, or a Besikovich set, is a subset of Rn which contains a unit line segment in each direction. There's a result by Besikovich. From about 1920, that such sets can have measure zero. And the conjecture, which is still open, is that any such set in Rn must have dimension n. Tell you about how this is related to some problems in analysis. I'm going to start with the problem that Besikovich worked on in around 1920. Suppose you have a function f on R2 Riemann integrable as a function in the plane. Can you always find a system of coordinates x and y such that the Riemann integral of f can be evaluated by repeated integration in these two directions? More precisely, I want to know whether the integral of f of xy dx exists for any fixed y. And the double integral of f, or the Riemann integral of f, let's say it like this, is equal to the iterated integral here. So that's the question that Besikovich was looking at. And the answer turns out to be no. The reason has to do with Kakeya sets of measure zero. So, for instance, let's try to fix a coordinate system x, y, and see if we can figure out a function f, which is Riemann integrable, but you cannot define that for all y. That's easy to do. Let's just say that f is 0 except on the set of all rational numbers between 0 and 1 on the x-axis. It's just going to be the characteristic function of this set. Then if I fix y equals u, then this integral that does not exist is a Riemann integral. That's one of the requirements here. Have a problem with this one. But now if I choose a different coordinate system, so if I replace the coordinate system I started with by anything rotated, like this one for example, then for any fixed y, this is x, this is y, for any fixed y that there's at most one point here where the function is 1. So it's Riemann integrable for any fixed y, and I can use the iterated integral to evaluate this. But now I'm going to take a modification of this, which looks as follows. Basically, I want to have one bad line segment like this in each direction. So for every fixed direction in the plane, I'm going to pick a unit line segment, pick some sort of a dense subset on it, and then the function is not going to be Riemann integrable along that interval. And then if I can get all of those intervals to intersect a lot so that the obtained set has measure 0, then the function is going to be Riemann integrable. S is again the characteristic function of the set E. But now E has all of those line segments in it. F is Riemann integrable because it's one only on a set of measure 0. But on the other hand, if I fix any coordinate system, I always have one line segment that's bad with respect to that. So that solves this problem.
Compacted.
Sorry?
Compacted.
Okay, here's another application of Kakeya sets to analysis that's a little bit more complicated, but still relatively simple. We're going to look at the problem of differentiating integrals. One of the well-known results in Lebesgue integration is the Lebesgue density theorem. One of the possible formulations of that is as follows. Let's say that f is locally integrable on Rn. And I'm going to look at integrals of f over small balls centered at some point x. Okay, this is x, and this stands for a small ball of radius epsilon centered at that x. Then we know from Lebesgue's theorem that this goes to f of x as epsilon goes to 0 for almost all x. I'm sorry. If you average this over small balls, you get f of x for almost all x. The question that I'd like to look at is what happens if you replace balls by other sets of small diameter. So, for instance, let's say that I want to look at rectangles. Let's say that R epsilon are rectangles of diameter less or equal epsilon centered at x, and do I have a similar result for rectangles instead of balls? Do I have 1 over the volume of the box, the integral of f over the box? Does this approach f of x for almost all x? Again, the answer turns out to be no. And that's even if you take f to be the characteristic function of a set. There are a couple of different ways to see it. One uses directly the Sikovich set. That was done in a paper by Busman and Fuller about 1934. Actually, there's an easier way to see it using a construction that's closely related to that of Besikovich, and that's Nikodym sets. A Nikodym set is a set in the plane. Actually, it's going to be contained in the unit square. It's supposed to have measure 1, and for any x in the set E, there is a line through x such that the set E intersects the line L of X only at one point, that's X. So basically you almost fill out the unit square, except that for each X in this set, you have a sort of a corridor, a line that does not intersect the set anywhere else. That construction is...
Yes? So you put absolute value here. Do you mean absolute value or do you mean measure?
Oh, I'm sorry. That was supposed to be the set. So for each x, you have a line that goes through x, and otherwise it's free of all points of E. And once you have that, it's easy to contradict something like this. Basically, you take an approximation of this set, and then say you want to contradict that at a point x. So that's this one. So you choose a rectangle in a very narrow rectangle in that particular direction, and then if your set here is a close enough approximation of the actual Nicodym set, then this rectangle is going to be free of all points of E. And then because this set was supposed to be large, it's
E
is actually contained in the unit square. It cannot be compact, the set E, but then when I take, I can approximate it by more regular sets, so that's what I'm doing here. This construction is closely related to that of Besikovich.
That's how you construct it. So you want to construct it in such a way that it's narrow rectangles are already missing all of them.
Yeah. Well, just like for Kakeya sets, the set itself contains only one unit line segment in each direction. But if you take a small neighborhood of it, it's going to have small area and contains a small rectangle around each tube. So that's the same sort of thing here.
Another way is to flip the continue of the depth of the push to this improvement curve downstairs, where you will have positive measures.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
All these points, you will have if you look there above, you will have a set of positive measures in a direction Lx, which will intersect E, which is a zero measure, something which has positive measures.
Mm-hmm.
So there, your integral will be positive, although the function that fixes the indicated function to basic group is something which is measure zero.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
So the argument in performance originally.
Right.
He didn't use Nicodim set, he used the Kakeya set.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'll get to Shafferman's construction in a second.
Okay, go on.
Okay. Anyway, so that counterexample disproves something like this. Okay, now there's a large group of problems connected with the restriction conjecture. Buchner-Ries and several other problems. All of them are very closely connected. The idea is going to be to show that these conjectures and also some others, all of them imply the Kakeya conjecture. Mm-hmm. More precisely, if you could construct Kakeya sets of dimension less than n in Rn, then you could construct counterexamples to all of those conjectures. Also, there's a relationship that goes the other way. The Kakeya conjecture does not quite imply any of this, but there are some partial results in that direction. I mean, first of all, we don't know the Kakeya conjecture to begin with. And second, even if we did, it's not clear whether this would imply any of that. There's there are lots of people who worked on that. Let's start with Stein, Sefferman, Cordoba, Thomas, Burgen, Wolfs, Sauge, Christ, Schlag, Tao, Vargas, Vega. Basically, the number of names I could mention here is only limited by the amount of time I have to do that. So if I wanted to mention everybody who did anything related to that, it would be almost all harmonic analysts that I've heard of. Okay, so let's start with the restriction conjecture. Let's first look at the way we usually define the Fourier transform. If f is a function in L1 on Rn, then I'm going to define its Fourier transform as the integral over Rn of e to the minus 2 pi I x times xi f of x dx. If f is an L1 function, then this is defined for all xi, and it's also continuous. And trivially bounded by the L1 norm of f. Then you prove Poincaré's theorem for f in L2, and that allows you to extend the Fourier transform to a bounded operator on L2. So we define f hat as an L2 function. Now this is defined only almost everywhere. Then, for f in LP, for p between 1 and 2, I can define the Fourier transform by interpolating between L1 and L2, and I get a function which is in LP prime. P prime is the dual exponent. Well, 1 over p plus 1 over p prime is 1. This is by Hausdorff-Young. And finally, if f is in LP with p greater than 2, I can still define the Fourier transform, but in general it's going to be a distributional Fourier transform. So in particular, it doesn't have to belong to any LP space. The question that I want to look at is, I start with a function f in LP. And can I restrict the Fourier transform of f to hypersurfaces in Rn?
So p is greater than 2 now.
I'll explain about p in a second. And let's just say hypersurfaces of dimension and minus 1. So let's talk about P. If P is 1, if P is 1, then the Fourier transform of F is defined everywhere. It's a nice continuous function. So anytime I take a surface in Rn or in any subset of Rn, there's no problem with restricting the Fourier transform of F to anything. So here the answer is yes. If P is 2, then we have a problem. Because in general, this is only defined as an L2 function, and that's defined almost everywhere. And that's the best we can do. So if a hypersurface here is a set of measure 0, then we really cannot restrict the Fourier transform of F to that. Now, if P is greater than 2, then it can only get worse, because then you have a distributional Fourier transform and you don't really know that much about it. But the interesting case is between P equal 1 and 2. You can't really go all the way to 2. You have to stop somewhere in between. And then the answer is that sometimes you can do it.
Meaning for some hypersurfaces.
Sir?
Meaning for some hypersurfaces.
Yes, and that depends on the curvature of the hypersurfaces. So, for instance, if the hypersurface in question is a plane, then it's trivial to construct counterexamples where you cannot do it. The Fourier transform of an sir? Yeah. It can just blow up on a hyperplane. On the other hand, if you take a surface with non-zero curvature, then the answer can be yes. I'm just going to look at the case when the hypersurface in question is the n-dimensional sphere. That has nice non-zero constant curvature. I want to figure out when the Fourier transform of F can be restricted to that. More precisely, for which values of P this is possible. More precisely, what we want to prove is an estimate of the following form. If F is a nice function to begin with, then the Fourier transform of F has LQ norm on Sn minus 1 bounded by constant times an LP norm of F on Rn. Now this is with respect to the surface measure on S. And I want to prove this for F, say, Schwarz functions. And then if I had that for Schwarz functions, then I can extend it to LP. So the question is for which P and Q, something like this, is going to be true. An equivalent form of this is something called the dual form. This is a little bit easier to work with. namely, I'm going to look at Fourier transforms of functions supported on a sphere. I'm going to explain this in a second. Constant times f. That's p prime. M prime. Okay, well, what this means is I take a measure supported on a sphere. S is going to be a function on S n minus 1. And then the Fourier transform can be defined as the integral of e to the minus 2 pi I x dot xi times f of x. The integration is over s n minus 1 with respect to the surface measure. So I want to prove estimates on that.
Sigma is an arbitrary measure.
No, it's the invariant measure. Okay, so the conjecture due to Stein is that we have the estimate f d sigma in L q of Rn is bounded by constant times the L infinity norm of f on the sphere. If q is greater than 2n over n minus 1. The constant depends on q. The conjecture is proved in dimension 2. That's due to Pfefferman and Stein. For all dimensions higher than 2, it's still open. And something else that we can observe right away is that if you take f to be constant, then this estimate is true, that the Fourier transform of a constant function here is in LQ for exactly that range of Q.
Excuse me, could you repeat the last question, the last statement?
Last statement was that if I take f to be identically 1, and if I compute the Fourier transform of that, and if I check for which q it belongs to LQ on Rn, it's exactly that range of q. Okay, so what I'd like to explain is how this is related to Kakeya. My n-dimensional sphere as n minus 1, and let's say that my function F is a characteristic function of a small spherical cap like this. Let's call it C, and F is the characteristic function of that. And we're going to have to figure out what the Fourier transform of that looks like. There's a general principle called the uncertainty principle that if a function f is supported in, say, a small disk like this, then its Fourier transform is approximately constant. I don't really want to explain what that means. On disks of the size about the inverse of that. So here, if f is supported on a very small disk, then the Fourier transform is going to be constant, or approximately constant, on a large disk. Now I can take that, rescale it differently in different directions. So for instance, if f is supported on a rectangle like this, then the Fourier transform is approximately constant on a rectangle like that. The narrow sides of this one correspond to the long size of that one, and vice versa. Okay, so here, if I have a function supported on something looking like this, let's say that the diameter of this is about delta, then the thickness here is about delta squared. Then the Fourier transform of that, the Fourier transform is going to be supported on something that looks like a cylinder, about constant. It's roughly constant on a cylinder, sort of like this, with the long direction the same as the direction here. Okay, so this is roughly what I'm going to get. Then there's also the question where I'm going to put it in the space. Let's say that I multiply this by a factor of e to the 2 pi I xi, x dot a for some vector a. But then when I take the Fourier transform of this, this factor is going to translate that tube so that it's, say, centered at A. And now what I'm going to do is take a function that is roughly the sum of a large number of functions of this type. F is the sum of functions fi, and each fi looks like that. Then, when I take the Fourier transform of f, I get the sum of Fourier transforms of these functions. And these are those long and relatively narrow tubes. And then I can use those factors to place them anywhere I like. So in particular, I could arrange them so that they would roughly approximate a Besicovitch set. Now let's see what happens if I get them to overlap a lot. I'm interested in finding the LQ norm of the Fourier transform of F. Let's start with the L1 norm. This is the integral of F hat. Now, I'm going to pretend that F hat is actually supported on this set. Actually cannot be supported on any compact set, right? Because the Fourier transform of a compactly supported function cannot be compactly supported. What would you have instead is that it decays fast outside of a set that looks like this. So that's what you have to do in a rigorous proof. Anyway, right now let's pretend that it's supported on E. And then the integral here is only going to be on over E. And then I can estimate this by Hurler's inequality. The integral of 1 over E, 1 over Q prime, times the integral of F to the power Q to the 1 over Q. And that's the size of E to the power 1 over Q prime times the LQ norm of F hat. Now what happens is if... let's say that I can keep the L1 norm of F reasonably large. That would need to be justified, but let's assume it for the time being. If I can make the set E very small, I have a bound from below on the product here. If this is small, then this is going to have to be large. So what we get from this is, first of all, if you have a small Besicovitch set here, that then you can get a function here with large LQ norm. So in particular, if you could find a Besicovitch set of dimension less than n, then this would be really small, and then the LQ norm here would be large enough to contradict the restriction conjecture. Also, you sort of get an argument that works the other way. If you cannot make this too small, then maybe you cannot do that either. So it kind of works the other way to some extent, but not quite. Okay. Any questions about this?
You really didn't explain the other dimension. It's only, from what you wrote, it's only the measure of it.
You have to explain the role of Q somehow, right? Because for some Qs it works, for some other Qs it does not work.
Mm.
The point
is that in the harmonic analysis, you've got these lines which are becoming tubes. The delta comes to a certain power from the dimension of the set, which is then built into the Q that you're allowed to use this for to get.
To really see it, you have to calculate all those exponents. So maybe here I should skip that.
And what is this between 2 and 3?
You can claim the battalion.
No.
What's what?
You can claim the battalion.
Claim sync, I don't. I know.
This is a joke.
Huh?
You said that was a joke.
What?
I also need apparatus for
it's
written n equal 2 and n more equals 3. So it's close between 2 and 3.
In dimension 2, there's actually an argument based on the dimensionality of Kakeya sets that proves the restriction conjecture. So that argument was due to Cordoba. The way you do it is you essentially break up a function into functions supported on small sets like that, and then you get something like this setup, and then you use the dimensionality an estimate on E. More precisely, you use a stronger version of the Kakeya set result, that's the Kakeya maximal function result. Okay. Well, one other problem that I really should mention is the disk multiplier problem. Let's say that you have a function in LP, and define SRF as the integral over Xi less than R e to the 2 pi I Xi dot X F hat of Xi dXi. And does that converge to F in LP as R goes to infinity? No, here I'm going to take R to infinity. So, for instance, if P was 2 and if I didn't have that, then this is just the inversion formula. So the question is, do I have this sort of an analog of the inversion formula in LP? In dimension 1, the answer is yes for all p between 1 and infinity. That's an odd result of Ries. Also, if p is 2, then this is true by Planck's theorem. That's just because the Fourier transform is an isometry on L2. The question is what happens when P is different from 2. It's also known that for p equal to 1 and infinity, it's not true, that's not difficult to show. Pfefferman's result from 1971 was that for all n greater or equal to 2 and for all p not equal to 2, the answer is no. And again, the construction is based on the existence of Kakeya sets. The idea is kind of similar to this. We first convert this to an equivalent question. Namely, whether S1, the operator that transforms F to that with R equal 1, question is whether this is bounded on LP. So, Pfefferman's construction looks roughly like this. You start with a function which basically is the sum of characteristic functions of tubes. And then you can do it so that the operator S1 maps this function to a function that looks similar, except that all of the tubes are translated by a certain length in the direction of its long axis. So this one gets translated here. This one gets translated there, and so on. And then, again, you try to arrange those so they form an approximation of a Besicovitch set. Here the LP norm is not that large because all of those are disjoint. But here, if these tubes intersect a lot, then the size of the support is going to be very small. So again, you can use the same argument with Hölder's inequality, and the LP norm is going to be large. Does that look reasonable? Mm-hmm. Okay, so well, if it does, then why doesn't this work for p equal 2? Any ideas? Yeah, but where did I cheat? I mean, that argument with Hölder's inequality should work for all p greater than 1, right? So. Actually, what happens here is that when you get these tubes to overlap, these functions are not exactly characteristic functions of those tubes. Okay. And same here. So you can have lots of cancellations. And in L2, you don't get a counterexample because you have... You basically use L2 orthogonality of those. And then these are not quite going to be orthogonal, but you still have a lot of cancellations. On the other hand, if you look at LP for P not equal to 2, then you don't quite have that. For instance, if P is large, then a statement about the LP norm of this function would be a statement about its set of large values. So, for instance, it could be possible that those cancel out in L2, more or less, but you still have a fairly large set of large values. And that's one thing that you have to deal with if you want to prove something in the other direction. Say, from Kakeya estimates to those estimates in analysis. You have to use some geometrical arguments, but also there's non-trivial analysis involved. Okay. I guess I might also stop here.
Any questions?
Curiosity question. I don't know. But if it is equal for P equal to, not equal for P not equal to, it should be some more each normal division when it's still true and for a moment it stopped to be true around point 2. This would explain perhaps this picture. Perhaps for studies, so there are some answers, no?
This counterexample works for all P not equal to 2. What is true is that if you use a regularized version of it, this is called the Bochner-Ries conjecture. So you insert a multiplier here. 1 minus xi over r to some power lambda. And then you look at this for different values of lambda. Then it gets a little bit nicer. And then you have a range of p close to 2 in which that is true. Without that factor, it fails for all p different from 2.
For
all lambda positive.
Any further questions? If not, then let's thank Isabella for two rather.